Please pray with me. O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Blessed Master,
Dearest Mother,
Saints and Sages of all religions,
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles,
and give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only King.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Amen. From the Vision magazine, a poem from Swami Ram Dass entitled Source. Life flows from an ancient source. The source is sweetness, bliss eternal. All life is the expression of this bliss. Ignorance of the source is the bitterness of the life. Know the root is the free immortal joy. Then life is a stream teeming with pure delight. Now it glides in rhythm of harmony and peace. Life marches informed with a subtle divine energy. 'Tis not daunted by obstacles and onward goes, conquering and surrendering and creating its course. The fragrant flowers of love and service, blissful itself and yielding peace to all, life knows its source. In an article entitled Secret of Action. Action is the natural function of every human being. The birth of a man denotes descent and movement. So none who is born can avoid the dynamic nature of his existence. Change and evolution mark the progress of his life. Even dissolution is a stage for a higher growth and a greater birth. His internal organs, mind and intellect, are ever active, even though he may be still or inactive apparently. Complete cessation of all action is impossible. When you visualize a state of perfect stillness and calmness, you can simultaneously posit a state of intense activity. Hence, action is the basis as well as the crown of all manifestation of life. What is the secret that underlies the principle of action? What is the true knowledge that stands beyond the dynamics of nature? Just as from one center innumerable rays are projected in all directions, so from one fundamental source proceed the varied activities of life. To comprehend this source is to know the secret of action. This action is the Supreme Godhead, who is the cause of all creation. When the entire powers of the intellect, emotion, and will are concentrated on the eternal reality, a human being attains to the highest skill in action. Action performed in this state of highest absorption is the eternal center of the universe, is what is termed as yogic action. Now the yogi is said to be as good as inactive, while all the time he is busily active. Every bit of action that he does then bears the stamp of the highest concentration. Then again, such an action reveals all the beauty and dexterity of a master worker, a true karma yogi. Exhaustion, depression, and diminution are foreign to such a worker. he ever lives and acts in the consciousness of the higher self, God. For the turmoil of repercussion and fatigue belong to the lower self. Besides the exalted state of the karma yogi, when engaged in action, the work turned out by him is also of a far-reaching and long-abiding nature. He leaves a permanent mark of good upon the world. Every one of his actions, small or great, has a glorious tale to tell. His life is like a flame that burns and throws its light far and wide, and expends itself in so doing. It is simple, flowing, and spontaneous. The splendid acts of heroism, the inspiring words of the poets, and the masterpieces of the sculptor and the painter, the enthralling strains of the musician, are all the productions of great geniuses when they are merged in the eternal self. It is doubted whether action of the most skillful type can be possible when the mind is drawn away from the touch of outward life and made to sit enthroned in the supreme yoga. In fact, no action possesses supreme excellence can ever be possible unless the worker is in a state of yoga. Yoga should, therefore, be the foundation for the blissful expression of life. Yoga does not signify renunciation of action, but elevation of it to the loftiest spiritual value and significance. Take up every action that you perform in life with a mind perfectly one with your immortal essence. Whether the action be of ordinary or of extraordinary nature, you will have achieved the best results, bringing out of you the utmost capacity for it. When life is lived in this manner, it will march on from success to success, leaving in its wake a radiant impress of unalloyed beneficence and uplifting service to the world. And from the book Yogi Raj Sri Shama Charan Lahari, a biography of Lahari Mahasaya. This is an episode of Another Day. This Mahapurusha, whom nature could not even affect, remained within the family precincts, yet stayed perpetually detached from the world, domestic affairs, and body consciousness. Like other days, that day also in the morning, he was returning home from taking a holy dip in the Ganges. In the middle of the road, a person told him, "Your foot is injured and bleeding." Yogi Raj, taking a piece of cloth, bandaged the wound, and coming home, as usual, entered his room and gradually became engrossed in samadhi. A few hours had elapsed. The house folk, while moving about along the room, noticed that a narrow stream of blood was trickling down the outlet of the room. They saw that the blood was trickling from the room where the sublime yogi was in samadhi. Being worried, they entered the room, and after innumerable calls, broke his samadhi and inquired him whether he had a wound in any part of his body. Yogi Raj did not remember anything. Therefore, he said, "There is no wound in any part of the body." But the housefolk were still anxious. They asked, "Then from where is all this blood coming?" Suddenly, the great yogi recalled. He answered, "While returning home after a holy dip in the Ganges, I had injured my foot, but bandaged it. Later it was observed that instead of bandaging the wounded toe, he had bandaged the toe on the wrong foot, and as usual, the blood was oozing from the wound. He had attained such a stature of going beyond body consciousness. In this regard, he would remark to his devotees, "By practicing regular prana action, when the prana air is permanently centered on the head, then yogis lose their body consciousness. It is then that a yogi achieves complete static settlement in the kutastha, or the ajna. In attaining a state of being wrapped in yoga, is constantly united in Brahma, and achieves a detached state from the material world." The kutastha is centered here in the ajna, and Brahma is the sahasrara, or the top of the head. You can achieve this if you make endeavors. Therefore, he would advise all, perform all actions by remaining in Kriya's transcendental state, or in the state beyond action. Just as Rajasthani bells carrying pitchers on their heads crack jokes on the way, yet their mind is fixed on the pitcher. Similarly, place the mind on kutastha and perform all actions. But remember that without practice, those women could never carry the pitchers on their heads in this manner. Similarly, without sadhana, the mind cannot be placed in kutastha and all actions performed. It is exclusively dependent upon pranakarma. Speak of actionless action, which is a phrase from the Vedas and the Upanishads. Of course, the term itself, actionless action, is a paradox. How can you have something that is actionless being put into motion, put into action? And how can something be in action and be called actionless? The key is that within you is the possibility for rising or raising the prana, or the life force within you, up through the spine and up to the ajna here at the third eye point, and up to the top of the head at the crown of the head, which might be termed Brahma. When your life force is withdrawn, in Papa's case it was through intense chanting. In Lari Mahasya's case, it was through Kriya Yogas. And we have the great blessing of having both these options available to us in our sadhana. But through chanting, through the Raja Yoga techniques of Kriya, through acting in this world in complete ideal of service and surrender, we can purify the mind and the life force that is within us. The life force running through us is always pure in that sense. It comes directly from God's source. That is the source for our being. Just as a picture cannot be painted without using shadow as well as lighter spots in order to portray the contrast between the light and the shadow, so this material creation must have contrast in it. It must have a duality to it. There always will be a high and a low, an in and an out, an up and a down. These opposites are characteristic of this material creation. And to that extent, it is of total purity. When we look at nature, we can walk through the woods and we can see there an old and decaying tree. from that old and decaying tree that has laid itself parallel to the earth, we see many new trees growing from that one nursery log. And this is the very nature of the world, is that the new life feeds upon and is dependent upon the death of the previous life. All of us who live in this world are dependent upon those who have gone beyond us. I think there was an author who once said that we stand upon the shoulders of giants. And it is the truth. Those who have gone beyond us, the great spiritual masters, the great intellects, the great scientists, the great poets, the great authors who have gone before us, have all shaped our thinking, our lives, to one degree or another. And we are the beneficiaries of their greatness of spirit, of their greatness of minds, of their greatness of intellects. And so this constant coming to life, the fruition of life, and eventually the destruction of life, is going on all about us. Our bodies are a reflection of that. We come into this world as a growing thing. So many changes that go on within us through our younger years, until finally we come into the fruition of adulthood. Finally, the changes have resulted in a complete adult body. But no sooner has that happened than the body begins to disintegrate right before our own eyes. And it's a thing that happens beyond all of our anticipation, all of our wants sometimes. As one speaker I heard once said that you can take a bath in oil of Olay every day and you'll still get old. It won't make a difference in that sense. Because it is the nature of this world, therefore it is the nature of this body that goes through these contrasts. So we learn that there is nothing permanent in this world. There is nothing permanent about this body. People that we know, they grow up into adulthood, gradually they grow older, and eventually they leave this body. And it has always been so. And it will always be so. Jesus summarized that by saying once that the poor you will always have with you. There will always be this aspect of nature, this aspect of this world, that is difficult as long as we are attached to it, as long as we see it as our all and our all. If the actor were to go onto the stage for a brief play and act his part and was trembling because he was so afraid that once the play was done, his life would be done, his existence would be done, he would have a very bad time of it indeed. But if he knew that that part that he was playing would be a part of a larger life, would be a fulfillment of a dream that he would have for some period of time, but the dream would move on, and he would move on along with it. And that the best he could do is to play that part with all the vigor, with all the intelligence, with all of the talent that he could bring to bear upon that role. And once having done, he would leave it behind him in gratitude for the opportunity to have played the part. What a different experience that would be for him to be in that role. And so with each one of us, if we cling to this body, if we cling to this world in such a way that it makes us miserable, it makes us forlorn, because we know, consciously or subconsciously, one day we will leave this body. And as a result of that, our attachment creates pure misery. Now, we are all guilty to that to one extent or another. because we rely on this body. We rely on the role that we play in this body. Those attachments run deep within us. Now, there are two primary ways for approaching spiritual consciousness, this transcendent state that lifts us out and beyond the body consciousness. It is only by entering into this transcendent state that we will achieve any sense of freedom, that we will go beyond this body consciousness and attachment that has created so much misery. And then we can be like the actor who is on the stage reveling in the fact that he was able to have his time on the stage and knowing that in truth it was but a brief passing moment and he could bring his all and all and enjoy it to the complete hilt. Those two methods come about through the yoni and the bhakti. The yoni is the mind, the intellect, that tries to sever its attachment to the body, to its role, that takes the sword of wisdom and slashes about it all the cords of attachment that keeps the ego identified with this body and its role in the world. The other way is through the bhakti. And the bhakta will seek to expand the self, to identify with its beloved divine consciousness that is the author of its existence. It creates a love affair with God and seeks to find union with that infinite beloved consciousness from which it has sprung, from which it is always embedded, and from which it will ultimately return. It is through this divine love affair that the bhakta reaches out and expands the consciousness, identifying not just with the little body, but with all the body of the universe in one divine love pulsation that is a result of this creation for its creator. And in our path, we will, in most likelihood, use both the yana and the bhakta. Because we have the mind, but we also have that passion, the passion for the divine consciousness, the passion for life, for going to the ultimate extent that this consciousness can reach. This passion for life is the author of everything that we see. Everybody who is doing any action on this world, in this world, is demonstrating that passion for life. And they're bringing with them some idea, some notion of what this life is about and how they will achieve happiness. Every individual is an experimental laboratory for happiness, for finding bliss. Each person acts out their own theories. They have their own pet ideas about what will produce that happiness. And even if an individual lives primarily unconscious in this world, nevertheless, they still have their own private ideas that they're clinging on to. I was one time thinking about what is classically defined as nerds and how there is a very specific way that nerds dress in this world. And oftentimes people describe nerds as those people who don't care about their dress. But just try to get the nerds to dress differently than they do and you'll have a fight on your hands. They very much are very concerned, very conscious exactly with how they dress, how they present themselves. and it's very fixed in their minds. So it's not true at all that they are unconscious or of how they dress or that they don't care about their dress. Their dress is a very specific statement about who they are and how they interact with this world. And every one of us is a statement. Our outward form, our outward behavior is a statement of who we are and our theories about what's going to produce happiness. And just try to get somebody to change their behavior, change how they are in their world, and you'll have a real fight on your hands. Because they don't want to. They like it. And even people who complain miserably about their life, get them to try to change it. And oh, it's like a cat yowling at nighttime. It's terrible. And you just can't get them to change. And you think, if they would just do it this other way, they would be so happy. They would be like I am. And it's not, it just doesn't happen that way. Because there is that deep clinging to this life, to our notions about life. And so it's not an easy thing to change. We know that by trying to change ourselves. I think that's why we get in the business of trying to change other people. It's a lot easier to try to think about getting somebody else to change than to change ourselves. So it's the focus, when it's turned within, is we have to face those notions that we carry, those pet ideas that we think will produce happiness. Now, we're all of us multiple personality disorders. We have so many different aspects to ourselves. So we have a spiritual notion. We have a spiritual self. And it decides, I'd like to live a spiritual life. I'd like to make some progress in that area. So we determine on ourselves to take on a discipline, to meditate every morning and every night. And the first thing we know, there is some other part of ourselves who wants nothing to do with that whatsoever. And it wants to go out and do anything, probably just the opposite of what we'd think a spiritual person would do, rather than sit and meditate. We try to change some behavior. We try to tell the truth all the time. The first thing we know, we're put in some situation where it's completely embarrassing and humiliating to tell the truth. And we're right in the midst of the battle of deciding whether to tell the truth and to keep with our spiritual discipline or to tell one of those little white lies just to avoid, just to escape some humiliating, some difficult circumstances in our life. And it's the same the world over. Everyone who enters upon the path of change, the path of transformation, the path of spiritual unfoldment, has to encounter those opposing forces that are within each and every one of us. Now, the oppositional force is sown into this worldly consciousness. Just as I was saying earlier, you have to have light and shadow in order to have a picture. So you have to have an oppositional force. It is the creative tension through which this world has been created. And so there is that notion of the devil. Now the devil is that oppositional force. It is that which opposes. That which pushes against the light. That which would prefer to remain in the shadows and in the darkness. And it is a very real, a very powerful force within this world. It also exists within the mind of man. Once man begins to identify with the shadows, begins to identify with that oppositional force, then the mind becomes hateful towards the light. That Jesus, the great master, said that darkness is not neutral to light. It hates the light. In any time that we've been identified with something that we're not very proud of, and we don't like that much about ourselves, but it's exposed to the light, we know that we don't like that light very much, that light of truth, that light of exposure. We would almost be rather anywhere than to get that part inside of us to get exposed to that light. So it's through that light and that darkness and the tension that gets created between the two of it that most of us find ourselves. Now, some people have a greater portion of light, and some people have lesser. They're more identified with the darkness. But we're all of that mixed nature, every one of us. And so that play between the light and the darkness, the light and the darkness, is something that is enrapturing to us. It captures us. And we will do many things to avoid the light. If there is some difficulty that has come into your life, there's some oppositional force that's coming into your life and creating such a tension in you, and you want to run away from that light, then you know that you're on the field. You know that you're on the field. And what decisions you make will determine your future. That's the very nature of karma. Karma means action. Action and reaction. And by entering into this field of action, you will also get a reaction for everything that you do. In order to withdraw this life force up into the ajna and then into Brahma, you have to confront every one of those actions that you have ever put forward from yourself. And this is why sadhana is difficult. This is why it is the razor's edge, as it is described in the Upanishads. It's the razor's edge because we have to stay focused completely on that beam of light. And forces will try to pull us to the left and to the right. And this is the very nature of our path. So if you're experiencing that in your life, if you're experiencing that in your path, don't be troubled. That is your path. That is the way. Now that these powerful forces sometimes get the better of you, do not make that let you stop. Every person who has ever tried to achieve anything of note in this life, read about their lives, read about their journeys, and you will find that every one of them has gone through extreme times of darkness, times when they did not think that they would be able to achieve their goal because of the overwhelming nature of the dark forces against them, those forces that were in opposition to them. It was only by continuing to pursue it, even through those dark times, some note of faith, some note of perseverance was in them so strongly, so powerfully, that they were not able to turn away from that goal, that lofty goal that they set out for. And as a result of that perseverance and that deep down faith, they achieve something of note in this life. Now, as was said by Papa in this reading today, some people are out on a big stage. Their life is exposed to many. There are others who live a quiet life, much more subdued. Whether your acts appear in your mind to be large or to be small, it makes no difference from a spiritual standpoint. Your actions, your life, will be measured not as the world measures a life, but measures it from a spiritual standpoint. Is there a purity? Is there an adherence to light? Is there that absolute devotion toward attaining that highest spiritual consciousness? That will be the measuring sticks by which your life will take on meaning. And all the measurements that the world has of whether your actions are said to be great or to be small, to be famous or to be infamous, will not be of any account whatsoever. Not any account whatsoever. You will be known strictly by that spiritual quality that you have attained and that you have abided by throughout your life. That's something to think about. So fame in this life, largeness of actions in this life, cannot be measured as the world measures it. It does not mean that you either need to turn away or turn toward worldly fame of greatness of actions. You merely need to abide by that inner light and that inner guidance by going into that still state within you. My own life has been quite interesting since the beginning of the first of the year. And at that time, God decided to put me through some experiences that at that time were related to the greater goings-on in this world. And this body went through many things. I say this body. This body has three different aspects to it. One is this physical body. The other is the energetic or the astral body. And the third is the causal body. And all three bodies were put under tremendous pressure, tremendous difficulties. And through those experiences, it was as if the life force, the prana, was almost completely withdrawn from this physical body. It was a chore to move from one room to another. And it had enough to make the heart beat and to make digestion to operate and those kinds of things. But it didn't have much left over for anything else. Yet, at the same time, there is a tremendous source of light, a tremendous source of powerful light that was emanating through this form. And so it was quite something to be encountering such a tremendous force that was emanating through the spiritual body but was unavailable for the physical body to operate in at all. As of the 15th of this month, the experiences that began at the first of the year lifted off of this body. It's interesting, I'm no astrologer, but that was also an occasion for a full moon and also a total lunar eclipse, which is a rare thing. So it's quite something that all of these forces seem to come together at the same time. At that time, the forces that seemed to be around me were cable-like or serpent-like, with their jaws biting deeply into the subtle astral nerves, or the nadis, that had created a lot of pain and difficulty for this body. It had also cut off the life force for this body, and at this time, through internal observation, those serpent forces withdrew themselves. Now, when you encounter these astral forces, many times you'll see them in an animal-type form. Many of the Native American stories of animals taking on mythical or mystical aspects are a result of these astral forms. These astral forms are energy forms They are of dreamlike nature, yet they have a very powerful, energetic influence on your body and also possibly on your mind. So many times you may see these astral forms taking on different animal type forms. And this is the reason. Sometimes it's a projection of your own mind, sometimes it's a projection of that astral entity and what kind of form they're choosing to take on. We're existing in a time when there is obviously a great clashing of forces, of light and dark. There is a great light that is being given birth to. And it was the reason why in the last century there was such a tremendous influx of very great souls. We had many on this earth that were avatar nature. Avatar means descent of divinity into a body. And these are perfected souls who have chosen to take on earthly incarnation in order to help this world over difficult parts. And Mother was one such one who had no karma of her own. She had nothing left to work out in her own personal life, but came to this world in order to help it work out its greater karma. Now, some avatars become well known to the world, and others remain in relative obscurity. And again, it is not a measurement as the world measures. Babaji, who is described as Master as the Mahava Avatar, a great or supreme avatar, avatar of avatars, until recent years has been completely unknown to the world at large. And yet this great being has existed for hundreds, perhaps thousands of years through history, having his influence in this world, teaching a few select ones who he called to him. And this was his nature. He chose to come onto the larger world stage at this time. And part of that was coinciding with moving in more completely to this Dwapara Yuga, or this age of electricity, the electrical yuga. The electrical yuga is the astral body, and so we see a lot of interest in the astral body. We've seen a lot of interest in channeling. There's a lot of immaturity about this. There are those who are opening themselves to the exploration of these inner bodies without realizing that they are not an ultimate in themselves. They are and can be very easily a sideshow. And so there are people who are interested in astral powers, who are interested in astral projection, electrical nature of the body, Krillian photography, all of these kinds of things. None of them in and of themselves are a bad thing. However, they must come ultimately from the place of wisdom. And we can only achieve that wisdom if we achieve our oneness with the infinite. If we simply exchange the material plane for an inner astral plane, we are not achieving much. In fact, we are wasting our time because we are still acting out of ignorance. We are not yet guided by divine wisdom. Therefore, the law of cause and effect keeps us ensnared, if not on this realm, then another. And there are certain dangers in those others that are not present here. So we should not be sold short in our pursuit for truth. By getting focused upon these relative planes between ourselves and that infinite divine consciousness within us, we are selling ourselves short. And we will see the error of our way one day. So do not do that. Do not do that. Put your mind on the highest. Put your mind here at the Ajna. Put your mind here at the Sahasrara, the Brahma center within your own being. Put your mind on the heart. Either one of these three places is of ennobling, transporting, transformational forces within your own being. Lift your mind and your heart up to God. Attain that absolute purity. And then your actions will be actionless because you will be staying in that still point. Even when I was going through all of these experiences that I described in the last 4.5 months, nevertheless, my mind was residing within that still point within God. With whatever happened in this physical body, the astral body, even the causal body, the mental body, went through different assaults. Still, that point of reference, that knowledge, that experience of God within me remained intact. And so it is with you. When you put your whole attention upon that divine source within you, there are many things in this world that can, from a worldly standpoint, go wrong. You can have difficulty with money, with relationships, with going through the ups and downs of life that is presented to every person who dwells on this material plane. And yet, if you keep your mind firmly fixed within, at that highest point of consciousness, you will experience an inner stillness. It will help to purify your consciousness, so that you might always reside in that divine center. And then you will see this play of light and shadow as merely something that is a projection of that original, creative, spiritual spirit with which you are one. And you will be that actor on the stage who will enjoy himself to the full, acting his role in the play, yet knowing that it is just a small portion of a much greater life, your greater life, that greater life within you, that spiritual vastness within you that is ever available to you if you but make the effort, if you but make the effort. And then you will know what it is to have action that is actionless because it derives from that stillness. And you will know that peace that surpasses all understanding because it goes beyond the mind, it goes beyond this world, it goes beyond every consideration. The peace that remains with you in life and in what we call death, which is nothing but a transition to a different life. And that in truth you are eternal spirit. And you have that vast capacity within you at all times, in all places. Once attaining that and getting established in it, it will never leave you. And then you will know the truth of your being. And you can act in all situations, but you are not affected by those actions. you are in truth one with your infinite Father. Will you please pray with me? O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet and surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of Thy perfection surging in every cell of my body, my mind and my intelligence are radiant with Thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with Thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He.